Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. Victoria Derbyshire's Interviews of the Week. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello and thanks for downloading Victoria Derbyshire's Interviews of the Week. This morning, an exclusive interview with the former undercover police officer accused of going native after infiltrating a group of environmental protesters.
The trial of six environmental campaigners has collapsed after an undercover police officer offered to give evidence on their behalf.
Well, in the last few minutes, we've had an exceptionally brief proceeding at the start of what should have been a far lengthier trial. The prosecution said that instead of a trial going ahead, a decision had been taken that they would offer no evidence, and from this point forward, there would be no criminal proceedings against the six.
My clients were not guilty. They did not agree to join in any plan to occupy the power station. The evidence of PC Kennedy presumably confirmed this. Yet that evidence, had it been kept secret, could have led to a miscarriage of justice. Serious questions must be asked relating to the whole policing of this protest.
One of the defendants, Jenny Shivers, says he's angry the trial may have continued if activists hadn't found out Mark Kennedy was an undercover policeman.
What we're particularly outraged about is the fact that the prosecution must have known about this witness from very early on in the case, and yet they did not reveal this evidence until pushed. So if he had not been uncovered by environmental campaigners, then might we actually still be on trial today, even though the prosecution had evidence that we were not guilty?
Well, his nickname was Flash, as in Flash with his cash. We met through organising this action, which I believed at the time was because it was something we cared very passionately about. Obviously, that's not the case.
This is a police officer that was not just observing what was going on and feeding information back to the police, but actually participating in building and executing the plan as well.
Someone doing the things he's said to have done clearly is involved, if not committing, criminal offences, and it begs the question whether he's encouraging others, and rather than assisting the police, even by their own rather strange values, whether he's in fact increasing the police workload.
The BBC has learned that prosecutors knew all about an undercover policeman 18 months before his role led to the collapse of that Nottingham climate trial.
The allegation couldn't be more serious. Britain's public prosecutor misleading the court and the public.
Newsnight understands that the CPS in Nottingham signed off documents confirming they'd reviewed a file of sensitive evidence, including references to Kennedy, a year before the trial collapsed.
The CPS were quite clear in January, saying that the evidence was previously unavailable. I mean, it's simply not true.
If it's untrue, then this is extremely serious, because this is what they told us, the defence, and this is what they told the court as well in an email. And I think that's very, very close to the line, what the Crown Prosecution Service appear to have done in this case.
Well, Mark Kennedy's extraordinary double life came to light in January, as you heard in those clips there, when a trial about a planned protest at Radcliffe-on-Soar power station in Nottingham dramatically collapsed. It emerged that Mark Kennedy had infiltrated the protest group 7 years previously. They knew him as Mark Stone, and he was secretly passing information back to his police handlers. As well as becoming good friends with many of the protesters, he had a relationship with one of the women. All this whilst regularly going back to Ireland to visit his wife and children. Mark Kennedy left the police force last year and he's with us this morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Victoria.
So you'd been working undercover for about 6 years, I think, when back in 2002 the police wanted you to infiltrate this group of climate change protesters. Tell our listeners what you were told about that mission.
I was approached by the NPOIU.
What does that stand for?
The National Public Order Intelligence Unit. To join that unit, and my role was to provide intelligence and information so that police services throughout the UK could proportionately police demonstrations.
And this particular group, what was your role there?
Well, it wasn't so much a particular group. My field was involved initially with the anti-war movement and environmental protesting.
Right.
So you can't identify a particular group because there are people who have passionate concerns for what they believe in, and different groups form and come together to protest in whatever way they feel is appropriate for their cause.
So I understand they were disparate, if you like, but what was your role? What were you expected to do?
Throughout the majority of my time with the MPOAU, my role was to provide intelligence which would be fed back to the MPOAU. The MPOAU would then sanitise that intelligence and provide information to police services so that they could make decisions as to how they should police demonstrations.
How sympathetic were you to the kind of demonstrations that climate change protesters wanted to get involved in?
All of these issues, Victoria, are very important, and they're issues which society in general has their own views on, and people get involved to whatever extent that they feel is right for them. Of course, you know, I myself have my own understanding of climate issues or other environmental issues, and I don't think you could have done my job without understanding the political scene and what those issues are. Mm. Of course, everybody has the right to protest, and that's absolutely fine, but my role was to identify where protest went beyond what the law allows.
So you were to pass intelligence back to your handlers about any potential law-breaking?
That's correct,
in
yes.
the future. How well organised were they? Were you impressed by the kind of skills that the different members brought?
Again, you know, I was involved with a very diverse community of people, people that were extremely passionate about what they believed in, people that could achieve great things with very little resources. So very intelligent people, very nice people, just, you know, a real cross-section of society.
Were they organised?
In what respect?
Well, were there drivers amongst the group? Were there people who could climb tall power stations amongst the group, for example?
I think, again, you know, in answering that question, as I said, the people that I met and socialised with and worked with were a real cross-section of society. So there were all manner of skills which people could draw upon.
And give us an insight into what your life was like as an undercover officer, how in those early days you create an identity so that the climate change protesters believe you and trust you.
It's not easy. The sort of activist community is a community which goes back a long, long way, and a lot of people know each other from many years before, be it university or maybe other protests which date back to the 90s. So to establish yourself as a person who has some credibility and who sort of can then become accepted is quite difficult, and it's a very slow process.
What did you tell them? Like, what was your backstory?
Well, I think that's been talked about greatly in the newspapers, and I don't really want to go into the sort of mythology of how an undercover officer establishes him.
For our listeners, though, who may not have read those reports, I mean, I'm not asking about, you know, secret things that you did, but what did you tell those climate change protesters about your life?
Well, when you're establishing a person and you're trying to build a pseudonym and a person, you have to backfill many years of experiences, and those experiences have to be things which you can recall maybe years afterwards. So the lies you tell when you first start are lies that stay with you the whole way through. So you have to create a family, you have to create reasons why you're in a particular place, you have to talk about jobs that you might have had, you have to talk about the school which you went to, and you have to do all that in a convincing way. So it's very difficult to do that. It takes a lot of time, and it's also extremely stressful as years go on to have to continue those lies and remember those lies, and also to recount those lies continually to people that actually become like really close to you. And that's not necessarily people that the police have an interest in, but people that were just generally Mark Stone's friends who happened to live next door, or who we'd go and watch the football with in the local pub on a Sunday. All those people, you have to maintain that the whole time, and it's very hard.
Did you ever slip up, or almost slip up?
I don't think so.
Are you a good liar? Does this mean you are a good liar?
That's... I was lying because it's what my job entailed, and in many ways I regret that now, and I don't like the fact that I did that, and it's very hard to live with that now, with people, or in respect of people that showed me so much care and attention and looked out for Mark, and when Mark was having a hard time, like, cared for Mark in such amazing ways that, you know, I may never experience that again.
Why didn't you leave earlier? Why be with them for 7 years?
Well, you know, I was in a relationship with a really amazing person.
One of the other protesters?
A person that was involved in the protest movement. And that person meant a great deal to me. And we shared many amazing experiences. And I don't know, I just felt really trapped as to how I was going to extricate myself from such a position without hurting that person, without hurting everybody else that was connected to me. At the same time, I was being tasked continually to provide intelligence, and I don't know, I just didn't have time to think, really.
Mm. You fell in love with this person, rather than it being a good way to elicit information.
Absolutely, yeah. Just, yeah, we were very connected, yeah.
You became a reasonably key part of the group, is my understanding. You were popular, you had some skills that they didn't have. Was there a point which you can identify at which it stopped being a job and you perhaps began to feel like one of them?
That's a really hard question. I shared many, many experiences with people, experiences which were not just in relation to protest and activism, and yet, you know, I've stood on the front line with people at demonstrations, and the camaraderie there and the support and the solidarity is absolutely immense. And certainly when you're being policed in some particular ways, you know, solidarity which you feel and which you're a party to is almost overwhelming. But yeah, I still did the job that I was asked to do. I think as time has gone on, I'm in a far better position, probably better than anybody around, to understand why people do the things they do, and their passion and what their beliefs are. And you know, I think that's something which is certainly something that I'd like to contribute at some point when the time is appropriate, for people to maybe understand the reasons why people protest, and hopefully that may go some way into how things could be better in the future.
When you say, you know, the kind of experiences you share, sometimes the way the police these kind of demonstrations, I wonder if perhaps you're referring to something in 2008 when you were undercover. You say you were beaten up by police officers whilst protesting against the Drax power plant in North Yorkshire.
That was 2006.
2006, I beg your pardon.
That's all right.
How involved were you in that campaign?
The year before had been the G8 protest at Glen Eagles. I think there was a feeling that people wanted to be more involved with protesting around the climate issue. So there were a number of meetings. I think the protest movement is short of people that can drive. I drive. I was fairly involved with the logistics of that climate camp coming together.
Mm. 29 men and women, including a university lecturer, teachers, filmmakers, were convicted of obstructing a train carrying 1,000 tonnes of coal to Drax.
Mm-hmm.
We have an email from one climate change protester who has asked us not to use their name. I wonder if you can ask Kennedy the following question, whether there was ever any other case that he was involved in where evidence was suppressed and not passed on to defence lawyers. And the Drax case might be a case in question.
I have no idea, Victoria. My role was very much on the front end of things. I was tasked to gather intelligence. That particular incident which you're talking about, I was invited at a very late I was invited to be a part of that action very late on in its planning. I had no idea that action was going to take place, and I was asked, because I have a driving license, I was asked to drive a van.
Mm.
I'm not a party to the decision-making processes. I'm not a party to case papers being put together. My role was to provide the intelligence so that things could be policed. I can't answer that, I'm sorry.
But what evidence did you pass on, and could it have been significant in the conviction of those men and women?
I think the intelligence which I passed on in relation to that was the fact that there was an action going to take place. There was an action, and there was going to be a meeting at a particular place where people were going to come together to then go off and take part in that particular action the following day. You know, that was the bulk of it.
Mm. But what did you understand were the intentions of the group of people who were later convicted of stopping that train?
Exactly that the train was going to be delayed from entering Drax Power Station.
So your evidence was important?
The intelligence that I provided allowed the police to know that that action was going to take place.
You don't think it's more significant than that?
The subsequent arrest process, you see, the intelligence which I provided goes to the NPOIU, the National Public Order Intelligence Unit. They then, through their own systems, advise whatever police service or whatever area of police service so that they can police it in the way that they think is right. I have no knowledge as to how my intelligence is used, and it wasn't for me to be a part of that.
Was there any part of you that encouraged this delaying of the train, that contributed to the plan?
No, there's been a lot said, Victoria, about me acting as an agent provocateur. Like, that's not true. Sure, I went to lots of meetings. Everything I was involved in relation to direct action and protest, all those things were laid on. You know, all those things were already in being. And I would contribute a lesser role. You know, I would drive. I didn't start any actions, and I certainly didn't encourage people to do things which they weren't already involved in. And in some respects, you know, like, there are many people out there, and I'm sure some of them will maybe be thinking about it now if they're listening, but there's many people out there who probably didn't get involved in things as a result of me saying, look, is it worth doing this? Are we gonna, you know, we could all get arrested. You know, in some ways I saw I saw my role as a deterrent as much as anything, you know, to deter people from getting involved in things. So
what would your police bosses said about that?
I have no idea, but, you know, it's something which, you know, I don't know. That's all I can say on that.
Had you gone native?
No, I hadn't. You know, I was still reporting back to my cover officer every day. You know, I was still involved in the taskings that I was being tasked every day. You know, I was finding it hard, you know, very hard, and certainly a lot of the time I felt that the intelligence which I was passing back and other people were passing back wasn't being used to best effect, and that was becoming very frustrating.
Did your superiors know that you were in a relationship?
I don't know. That's something which I've gone through a very cathartic process recently, and I'm involved in a documentary being made, and the issue around that is, you know, at the time I didn't know, I didn't think so, nobody was saying anything, you know, nobody was mentioning like how socially involved I was with different groups, you know, whether I was spending too much time in the field as such. But when you sort of sit back and think about it and you have time to reflect, you know, I wasn't the only person out there doing that job. And people like Mark Stone are people that are of interest to the police. You know, not many people knew that Mark Stone was an undercover officer. So there's going to be people reporting on Mark Stone, where Mark Stone lives and what car Mark Stone drives, who Mark Stone might be seeing, who he might be socialising with. So now that I have had time to reflect, I find it very difficult to believe that they didn't know.
Well, they, you know, ACPO say it is grossly unprofessional. It is a diversion from what undercover officers are there to do. You must have known it was unprofessional. You must have known it could compromise the kind of intelligence you were gathering.
Yes.
Why didn't that stop you?
I don't know. I suppose it's the human side of it. You know, the type of work that I was involved in and other people have been involved in, I think it was a department that was going into something which maybe they didn't quite understand the social context of it. You know, we're not talking about the undercover policing, which people are more used to seeing in relation to television programs and infiltrating drug dealers and that kind of thing. These are people that have a social conscience, that really care about each other, and that I spent like many, many hours with every day. And I met this person and, you know, things happen.
Some climate change campaigners have described what you did as state-sanctioned abuse. They say that the women that you had relationships with were not able to give informed sexual consent because they didn't know who they were sleeping with.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know what to say about that.
Does it upset you? Is it true?
It's upsetting, yeah.
How were you able to reconcile what you were doing, i.e. passing on information, and at the same time deceiving a woman that you say you loved?
I haven't been able to do that.
Have you been able to apologise to her?
I don't want to discuss that at the moment.
Okay. If she was listening, what would you say to her?
She knows.
Mark, let me read some messages from people who are listening to you talk this morning. JC says, Kennedy is a disgrace. Shame on him. This guy will never get the trust of anyone for the rest of his life. Is that something that you're anxious about?
It's something I've got to live with.
Mark Buckingham says, ask him to name and shame the entire command structure of the police right to the top. Another listener says, why didn't he resign after about a year in, but instead took 7 years wages doing a job he didn't believe in? What sort of salary were you paid doing this kind of work?
A constable salary.
Plus
overtime.
Plenty of overtime, yeah. Stephen Miller says, how is it possible to go undercover for 7 years? What about your life if you had one outside of it? Must have felt schizophrenic sometimes. We haven't mentioned your wife and children back in Ireland. You still occasionally manage to visit them. What did you tell the environmentalists about where you were going?
Numerous things. I had a job, so I was away working.
Let me ask you about your superior's duty of care towards you. You've talked about the fact that they never asked about this sort of social context of being in this group over all that time. Do you believe they failed in their duty of care towards you?
Well, not just towards me, towards other people as well.
Do you mean other undercover officers in similar scenarios?
Yes. Like I said before, it was a role which was quite new. It hadn't been done very much before. And yeah, there are certain elements that there are certain failings, and I think those will be addressed at some point. And I'm not sure if this is the right place to talk about that now, but I certainly feel that there were maybe signs that went unanswered or that went amiss, which are prevalent both to myself and to other people as well.
Are you angry towards your superiors or not particularly?
I'm still trying to work out what my emotions are, Victoria. It's I don't know.
Let's talk about the plan then to break into Radcliffe-on-Soar power station in Nottingham. There was this meeting the night before at a local school, and you'd given the police intelligence that the meeting was being held there, which is when they turned up and arrested 114 people, including you. What was the point of that meeting?
There had been a plan to do this action,
which was to break in and scale the heights effectively and shut it down. Correct. Shut it down.
Yes. And I was invited at a later stage of that planning process to be involved in that action, and I was asked to do a particular job which I said I couldn't do, and the role that I did take was to drive a lorry. I thought that my role would be, as with the whole time I did that job, was to provide the intelligence so that that action could be policed in whatever way Nottinghamshire Police felt that they should police it. And I wasn't expecting to be taking an evidential role at all. And the decision was made that I should go along to those meetings and record those meetings, which I found quite surprising because I didn't feel that I needed to be there. I was a party to the plan, albeit at a later stage, but, you know, I knew what was going to happen and I didn't really feel that I needed to be there. And there's, you know, there's probably lots of lawyers out there and lots of people who might be listening who have some understanding of the legal process. And, you know, to be providing intelligence for 7 years or 6 years, as it was, in relation to activism and protest without actually recording anything. Obviously, like, I was making notebook entries and keeping notes, but to not actually be providing evidence, then to suddenly provide evidence. It's quite a difficult situation to be in.
Well, your role was changing.
Yes, but I felt, you know, with the role that I'd had for such a long time, I think there was an element of naivety there and a lack of understanding as to what it might be like to maybe have to give evidence against people that I'd become really close to. So that was what I was asked to do. Mm. And yeah, I recorded one of the briefings that was given at the Iona School, and subsequently signed the transcripts of those of that recording as my evidence, and wrote a statement accordingly.
We'll come back to the court cases in a moment, because sure. I'm doing this in chronological order.
Okay.
After that, you went back to the environmentalists, if you like, back in October of that year, to try and rebuild relationships, to try and rebuild friendships. I think it was at this point that they confronted you about the fact that you might be an undercover police officer. Tell us what happened.
No, that was sometime afterwards. That was the following year.
Tell us what happened there.
I don't really want to discuss that at the moment. That's between me and them, and, you know, we know what happened there, and I think that's only fair that stays as is for the time being.
Did you try and deny it initially?
Like I said, Victoria, I don't really want to discuss that right now. So,
tell us why you don't want to discuss it.
Because those people mean a lot to me, and they had to do what they had to do, and I think we all understand why between us, and I don't think that's at the moment something that's that needs to be out there just yet. There's other more important issues which need to be discussed, and you know, what they did, they had to do, and they did it well enough. So,
a Newsnight source recorded you expressing your deep regret that you had betrayed so many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to make amends. Mm-hmm. I really do. I can hate myself so much. I betrayed so many people.
And you also made this offer to help.
Hello?
But if I can help, in what way I can, then I'd like to.
Why? Good. So you're not with the police now?
No, I haven't been for a while.
But you were with the police when we were all arrested on the 114?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what was going on in your mind there, your offer to help? What did that mean?
Well, that was a very difficult time for me. Psychologically, I was in a very dark place. I was considering some really stupid things. The fact that I'm sat here today is because I feel a little bit stronger and I feel able to talk to you about it in some ways. What was I feeling then? I felt that there were questions that needed to be answered in some respects. I was aware that there were certain decisions being made prior to those arrests, and I'm hoping that the independent inquiry, which is being called by Keir Starmer, may address some of those questions. That's why. I was also very conscious at the time that I was a witness for the prosecution. You know, I believed I was a witness for the prosecution, and I was very cautious about talking to the person who was on the other end of that telephone. Mm. And I was also very conscious and aware about the implications of me talking to Michael Swantz from Bindman's.
Who was the lawyer representing most of the other activists.
Exactly, representing all of them.
Except you.
Except me.
And you were advised by your handlers that, no, it would be fine, you don't need to be represented by this. solicitor?
It's sort of hard to explain, but because I was an undercover police officer who had been arrested, there was no way that I could instruct an independent solicitor or a solicitor like Michael Swantz, who was representing everybody else, because it would mean that the operation wouldn't be covert, or things would come out. So it was an impossible situation to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I felt that maybe there were some questions that needed to be asked, and I felt that possibly those arrests maybe needed to be looked at.
We'll come back to the DPP's inquiry a little later. That was only announced last week because new evidence emerged about what the CPS knew and when they knew it. But regarding the Ratcliffe-on-Soar case, 20 of those 114 men and women were convicted of conspiring to commit aggravated trespass. In court, they admitted they were protesting but denied the charges on the grounds that their actions were necessary in the fight against climate change.
Yeah.
Another six of those 114 were due to be tried in January this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the case was abandoned, mm-hmm. after the prosecution said that they had just found out that you were working as an undercover officer. Is that the point at which you were prepared to give evidence for the defence, i.e. to exonerate those six?
I'm prepared to contribute to an independent inquiry as to what my role was and as to what I put in my statement and as to what is in that transcript. That's what I'm prepared to do. And that will then exonerate those people.
How did you react when the Crown Prosecution Service said they'd only just found out of your involvement and that you were an undercover police officer?
I was quite surprised.
Because you knew that they'd known for a lot longer than that?
Pretty much from the point of when Mark Stone was arrested at Iona School, or certainly just shortly afterwards.
Mm. And we only know that the CPS knew quite a long time ago was because of a Newsnight investigation last week.
Right.
The CPS knew back in 2009 that you were working undercover with these climate change activists, hence the DPP independent inquiry. Why would they keep that hidden, do you think?
I don't know.
What would be their motivation?
I don't know. Hopefully the inquiry will find that out. Maybe there's things in my statement and things in the transcript which concerns them.
Do you have confidence in this DPP inquiry?
I can't comment because I don't know who's doing it or what format it will take. But if I can contribute to the independent inquiry, then yeah, I have some confidence that that those questions which are being raised might be answered.
What sort of issues would you like to see it look at specifically?
I'd be interested in seeing what the decision-making process was to arrest those 26 people out of the 114.
You mean charge them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To charge those 26 people out of the 114. That would be quite interesting. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's an important question that needs to be asked.
Mm. Do you have your own private theory as to why those particular 26 were charged?
I do, but I'm not going to discuss that right now.
Is that something you would tell an independent inquiry, though?
Yes.
Through the whole of our discussion this morning, you have referred to Mark Stone, the man you were when you were part of this protest group. The way you have described him in the third person, it's very much as though he is a separate person, a very different person. Is that how you feel about your alias?
No, I don't think so. What Mark Stone believed in and his values, and it's probably very similar to Mark Kennedy. It's a part of my life which has come to an abrupt end. It's very much like falling off a cliff. You know, I had hundreds and hundreds of friends, and I knew so many people and shared so many experiences, and that sort of overnight ended. I'm trying to sort of establish who I am now. And I think, you know, I have to kind of put Mark Stone in the background and try and think about where I'm going. Mm.
You said a little earlier you feel much stronger now, which is why you're able to talk to us today.
Yeah.
You were in a very dark place. You considered doing some stupid things. Are you referring to suicide?
It crossed my mind, yeah. Yeah, I'm not proud of that, but... yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to sort of think about. Sorry, Victoria.
That's all right. You don't need to apologise. Tell us how you feel towards the police now.
Police in general, you know, there are so many good police officers out there doing, like, really amazing things. You know, I work with some fantastic people. I really did. And this is not about having a downer on the police or, you know, turning my back on the police at all. You know, like, I was in the police for, like, over 20 years, and I work with some, like, fantastic people who do a really good job under difficult circumstances. And I think that needs to be recognised. And that's in answer to your question. But then, you know, I also experienced some elements of policing which, you know, I found embarrassing, you know, like the way that I was spoken to as an activist, you know, just it's not right. And I think there are these stereotypes which maybe some frontline police officers have of certain aspects of the community and society, and vice versa. You know, like, people have their stereotypes of what the police are, and I think that's a very difficult situation to be in, and I think that's a situation that that needs to change. Mm. Because if that doesn't change, then the way that the police approach protest and the way that protesters may turn up to a demonstration in anticipation of police retaliation or provocation, as is the case sometimes, you know, nothing will change.
A bit like we saw at G20?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can see a sensible, useful role for you in the future, liaising between the two groups, except neither group will trust you.
There is the fly in the ointment.
Mm. Right, some more messages from our listeners. Rachel in Kent says, sounds like Mark Kennedy wasn't supported by his employers like he should have been. Poor man. Let's hope they learn from it. Ian in St John's Wood in London says, sounds as though Kennedy is gearing himself up to suing the police. Good work if you can get it. Any truth in that?
I'm taking some legal advice.
So there's a possibility you will sue your employers, your former employers?
I can say I'm taking some legal advice, and they're going to... have a look at the opportunity for that, and if there is a case, then maybe I will. I don't know.
David in Acton in London says, what a brave man. If we had more people of such moral courage, what a better world this would be. Brian says, the Kennedy operation was an amazing waste of public money. What did they think they were going to achieve? Did heads roll and Kennedy just sat there and took the money? Did he ever say to his bosses, is this going anywhere? Or was he so involved in sex and dosh it distracted him? An absolutely disgraceful operation and a complete waste of huge amounts of public money. Was it a waste of taxpayers' money, the 7 years?
I don't know. I can't answer that. Provided intelligence that across Europe, and a lot of the intelligence I provided allowed for police services across Europe to police things and successfully do the job that they wanted to do. I can't say that. I don't know whether or not it's a waste of money, or if money was spent well, or if the results justify everything. It's very difficult to say that, and, you know, I was never in a position to be able to answer that question anyway.
Mm.
You know, I provided the intelligence, and if it was acted upon and used appropriately, then fair enough, and if it wasn't, then, you know. So,
It comes to undercover operations, I think many people imagine that officers are going undercover to infiltrate terrorist organisations, sure, or yeah, to pass intelligence back about potential terrorist acts. Climate change people?
Exactly.
John Stevenson has emailed to say, I'd like to thank Mark for what he has done. It is obvious that there is a worldwide conspiracy to see anyone that protests as terrorists, when it's clear that the powers that be seem intent on destroying our environment, economy and society to keep the status quo. Thank you, Mark. It's now time for you to rejoin the caring people of the world. And Ashley says, poor guy, left far too long in situ, bound to be very conflicted by what he had to do. He could have averted something serious and been a hero, but now all sides turn against him, a good man doing an impossible job.
Thank you.
What do you feel about the future? You're clearly making a documentary for Channel 4, which is will probably be aired later on in the year. After that, then what?
I have no idea.
Why did you leave the police?
That's a long question. Well, there's a long answer to that. But when the operation finished, I was just sort of hung out to dry. I'd spent 7 years undercover. During that 7 years, and I don't just speak for myself, I speak for other officers as well. During those 7 years, there was never any input into sort of a career development or any thought as to what you might do when you leave. I went for a meeting and, you know, I came out of that meeting completely, I had no idea. Like, they didn't know what I could do. I didn't have any up-to-date skills. You know, I probably couldn't even drive a Panda. You know, it's just, I felt really disillusioned.
But there would have been a job for you somewhere. They would have had to find you something.
It doesn't work like that, Victoria. You know, it's not jobs for the boys. It doesn't work like that, despite giving the 7 years that I did. Everything is, and rightly so, you know, it's a system which is based upon, like, fairness, and if you want a job, you apply for it, and if you're appropriate and you board for it and you're successful, you get that job. Mm. But I wasn't in a position to be able to board for anything or take an interview because I didn't have the skills. The sort of career development was totally neglected as a result of the sort of hunger for intelligence.
But would they not have had to send you on those kind of training courses in order to bring your skills up to date so you were in a position to apply for other jobs?
Those kind of things take time, and those kind of courses are few and far between. And because of what I'd been involved in for 7 years, any job which I applied for would have to be a job which was sort of out of the public eye, sort of, for want of a better word, reasonably covert. Mm. So, you know, those kind of jobs are few and far between, and the experience and the qualifications you need to achieve that, people work, like, for many years of their career to be able to obtain a job with that respect. So, or in that respect. So, you know, that was... as much as the opportunity might have been there to do that, you know, as a police officer with over 20 years service, you know, the support which I was hoping for didn't materialise.
But why leave? Why make it easy for them, if you want to put it like that?
Again, my state of mind at the time wasn't great. My decision-making process was probably flawed. I don't know. I just felt like, what do I do? Mm.
What are your thoughts about the future then?
Well, I want to try and build a relationship again with my children. That's been really severely damaged. That's important to me. And outside of that, I don't really know.
One listener on Twitter wants me to ask you this. Has Mark Kennedy been harassed by the police since this all came out in the open?
Initially, there was quite a clamour, I think, to try and get in touch with me. I was in America with my brother, who's, you know, he is my rock. He's really taken care of me. Strong, strong man. And there was, I think members of the MPOIU were intent upon flying out to the States to try and speak with me.
Is that harassment, or is that, I mean, well, they just wanted to talk to you?
Quite possibly, yeah. And I'm not saying it's harassment, but, you know, I didn't want to speak with them. And since then, I've been asked to contribute to some of the police-led inquiries and the inquiry that's being conducted by SOCA, like the Serious Organised Crime Agency. But for now, I'm holding back on that. You know, I'd rather contribute to an independent inquiry.
Should there be a broader debate, a broader discussion about how taxpayers' money is used when it comes to undercover operations? I'm not suggesting that chief constables, you know, hold a referendum with the local population about, you know, what organisations to infiltrate, but more broadly and more generally speaking.
Well, the, you know, I was always told that, like, an undercover operation and an undercover operative provides the sort of icing on the cake for the evidence process, and I think that's a very good way of looking at it, a very good analogy. You know, if there is no other way of obtaining evidence or information, then you may need to deploy an undercover officer, but I think it should be something which is a last resort and something which is given, like, huge consideration, not only for the people it might affect, but for the officer themselves. And that's how I always understood it, and I think to some extent the intelligence which myself and other officers was providing was immensely attractive to people working in the MPOIU, and it was information which was also attractive to sort of other policing agencies around Europe. So maybe that was overlooked a little bit.
Steve G says, I have genuine sympathy for this guy. I wish him well. I hope his life turns around.
Thank you.
And Andy in Wolverhampton has texted to say, I think Mark is a brave man, and I hope the woman he loves forgives him and there is a future for them. Thank you very much for coming on the programme.
Thank you, Victoria.
And for giving us your time this morning. Thanks for downloading Victoria Derbyshire's Interviews of the Week. You can listen to me each weekday morning here on 5 Live between 10 and 12.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.